So my name is Allison Carpen, and I now am at the University of Delaware, the Center for Research in Education and Social Policy, and this is a project that I completed while I was at the Food Trust. It's a partnership between the Fairmount Park Conservancy, who really was the lead on the project, the Food Trust, the Philadelphia Parks and Recreation Department, Hunting Park United, which I'll mention here briefly, and support was provided by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and I don't have any conflicts to disclose. So what I'd like to share with you a little bit is the background of a revitalization of a park, which I have to say, in all of my years in public health, this project is probably one of the best Cinderella stories I've ever witnessed. And I say witnessed because I wasn't really behind a lot of it. I was kind of brought in as a consultant toward the end, but it's really a fantastic example of how community partnership should go. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a background on that story and talk a little bit in more detail then about the concession stand and how we measure impact, not just in our example in Hunting Park, but also in another project in Princeton. So concession stands are very common, as you may know. As it turns out, there's about 397 national parks that have concession stands, and they issue about 500 contracts for concessions each year and gross more than, a billion annually. And that's just at the national level. So if you think about that filtering down to your local park systems, there's a lot of parks that are running concession stands in America. And as we're trying to fight the obesity epidemic and looking at where people are buying food, I think many of us can think back to being almost forced to eat the hot dog because that was all there was at the game and you thought you were going to die if you didn't eat something. So the goal then is to try and figure out ways that public and private sector can partner so that we're getting healthier food available where children are playing. And so the other common theme in trying to change concession stands, since I've been working on this a couple times, is really to try and increase the amount of nutritious food available, watch your price, and then also decrease consumption of the excess calories. So changing portion sizes is a common one, and keeping the healthier stuff within visibility. So Hunting Park, this is a picture of Hunting Park, and it's an 87-acre park in North Philadelphia in 2008. And I'll tell you, I teach at a couple different institutions, and I remember telling my students that I was doing a project in Hunting Park, and the one student who grew up in the city, she gave me this look like, oh my God, you're gonna die. And I said, do you know Hunting Park? She's like, only thing I know about Hunting Park is my mom told me never to go in there because it was too much prostitution and drugs, and you know, I just can't even imagine what it looks like right now. And I'm gonna show you some pictures, but really, everybody associated Hunting Park with prostitution, pretty much, and a lot of drug use, and nobody went in there at night for sure. So the neat thing is, this was a park that actually was part of the state estate of James Logan, who was William Penn's secretary. So it really goes back in the traditional sense of the Philadelphia park system. It was home to America's first horse race track in 1810. The city of Philadelphia acquired it in the 1800s, and it still stands today as an 87-acre park. However, in the 60s and, you know, beyond, managed to get into very complete disrepair. I remember looking at one of the tennis courts, and there was a tree in the middle of the tennis court about this big around, which tells you how long that tree must have been growing in the middle of the tennis court. So the Fairmount Park Conservancy, which is a nonprofit that is dedicated to improving the parks in Philadelphia, received funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and some others in 2009 to undertake what they called a master plan. Instead of just sort of going to the books and looking at what a master plan should entail, they really went back to the community and had a series of forums, lots of examples and ideas brought. And as part of that, they came up with this really very comprehensive plan, and at the same time came to establish what now is a 501c3 entity to run the park and a lot of the activities that are going on in the park that's completely community driven. The park, the population is pretty typical to North Philadelphia, primarily African American, but also Hispanic. Like, one side of the park is really more used by African Americans, the other side of the park is more used by Hispanics. The household income is relatively low. 40% of households are below poverty. A lot of kids, a lot of families in the neighborhood. And at the time, really, it was pretty little green space for an urban environment, and the tree canopy was pretty low. As you may also kind of allude through the statistics, obesity rates are a little bit higher than the Philadelphia average, 44%, 22% have asthma that were adults, high rates of diabetes. And for children, the same kind of trends pursue for obesity and asthma. So the master plan generated a couple of different categories of goals. Obviously, they wanted to create a safe place, but they also wanted to encourage community pride and bring back sort of what at one point had been a very great park. They saw the potential in the park and were committed to improving it. And so a year later, this revitalization plan was generated. And what it also recommended was a series of different kinds of activities. So first and foremost, they wanted to establish a formal community leadership. They wanted to then undertake a series of capital projects and then look at specific programs. And so I'm just going to briefly go through with you some of how this was formed. So Hunting Park United actually came about as a result of this process. It has 160 members now. It's gotten its 501c3 status. And it really operates the park. They meet regularly, and if you do anything in that park that you're not supposed to, someone will report you. The baseball field has just been completely repaired. You can see what it looked like before and after. Other capital improvements have included complete renovation of the lighting system. And this is all Fairmount Park Conservancy fundraised independently. The ball field, for example, was donated by a ball player in Philadelphia. The lighting system they fundraised for separately. The playground, they were able to get a Kaboom playground established here, which the community helped to build. One of my favorite pieces is these Aztecs. So in North Philadelphia, there's a football league called the Aztecs, the North Philly Aztecs. And the Aztecs were so determined to be football players in North Philly that even though the park was not a place they could go, they still associated themselves as the Hunting Park Aztecs, but they actually practiced on a completely different field. They never played or practiced on their own home field. And after 19 years, they actually became the champions and played on their own home field. And wait till you see this field. It's amazing. So that's our new field. At the same time, an investment was made into establishing new programs in the park. So now that the infrastructure is starting to come back, there's more people who want to come through the park and more activities happening there. And so the Food Trust established a farmer's market in the park that has EBT access and also Philly Food Box, which is a voucher program there. They established a community garden and an orchard, 11,000 square feet garden, which is managed by the Hunting Park Garden Club, which was also established. I know it just keeps going on, right? Cinderella story. And then the project that is embedded within this that I was going to talk about today in a little bit more detail is this concession stand. And I brought copies of a guidebook that we generated as a result of the project as well on creating healthy concessions, which is sort of a collaboration, or conglomeration, I should say, of projects, one of which is this. So what we did as part of the Hunting Park concession stand is this process. So first we evaluated the history of stand operations in the park. We brought back old operators. I wish I had a picture of the stand. It's completely boarded up. You wouldn't even know where the entrance was, or because it's just so dilapidated. Then we talked really, really long, hard talks with park administrators about a few goals, which I'll go through in a minute. But We really, as you can tell, the community owns this park, and they have a lot of programs and a lot of kids playing there, and they really were concerned that if there was an operation that was generating good income because it had been revitalized in the park that was selling food, that they did not want those funds to just, you know, be whisked away by Philadelphia and never to be seen again by everything in Hunting Park. And so we spent a long time trying to figure out how we could manipulate the rules to establish a framework by which the community got back the money from the concession stand. Facility needs and upgrades were also assessed. Looking, and then we started to look into what it would actually take to sell healthier items there, how many people would be there. The last item on here, the fifth item, really also took a lot of the conversation. So when you have a big park with no food, and lots of people in there, and great entrepreneurs in a neighborhood that's relatively low income, you have lots of people selling out of their trucks. And this created a problem, really, for the councilwoman, because her constituents were the vendors, and at the same time, when we were starting to clean up the park, and we had to start to get people to follow the rules and regs, because now the park was looking good, and there's a lot of visibility there. And so alcohol was one of the biggest ones where we could get consensus that, you know, we can't let people really be selling the 40s out of their trunk anymore, and we need to figure out ways to kind of regulate that with the community. And then other items actually helped us understand what the community really wanted. So chicken on a stick, there's a chicken on a stick guy, then there's some fruit people and things like that. And so we tried to find ways that we might be able to partner with the chicken on the stick guy and help him vend legally in the vending. And so we got some local folks who had expertise in entrepreneurship and also food expertise in getting legal to sell, like a food truck. So we actually did some preliminary, so I'll tell you, this story isn't over. So the renovations to the building haven't occurred yet. The fundraising is almost complete for the building, and so this is really about planning. And what we did is, I don't know if you guys have seen these, maybe it's more common among park people, but you can put a device in that will count how many people walk by or how many cars go by. And so we decided we would put a couple of these in the park to see not just who went through the park, but who actually did the perimeter loop of the park. And it turns out that there's about 143,000 cars that go through this park each month. The day travel went anywhere from like 700 to 1,000, and there's a lot more weekday traffic than weeknight traffic. We found that like the peak hours of traffic were really mid-afternoon to early evening, so around that 4 to 6 hour. Which helped us think about really the kinds of concessions we would have. And really peak traffic was on like Wednesdays and Fridays, which is when the ballparks were in heaviest use. And so we used the park metrics along with, I should also say this is the largest pool in all of Philadelphia. It's an Olympic-sized pool. They get about 29,000 pool goers a year. So, you know, there seems to be a good market for a concession stand there. At the end of the day, the estimated revenue was around $334,000 each year. About $16,000 was estimated as a reasonable expense for rent, and profit for the vendor was estimated to be around $78,000 a year. The rent figure is the one that ultimately would go back to the park, to the community group who's running the park. And then we got estimates for the cost to remodel the facility. Now, garbology may not be a word you're familiar with, and I wasn't either. But as it turned out, we were interested in what people were consuming in the park before. And if you go through the trash, you can see what people throw out. So what we learned through the garbology, which then led us to some of the car conversations, was how much liquor was consumed and also how much water. The water bottles alone were huge. And actually, unintended consequence or positive outcome of the garbology was that they started a recycling program in the park, because once we went through the trash and mounted up how much water bottles were there, they saw that they really needed to have more than just trash cans, but also recycling cans. I alluded to this moments ago, but what we also established is a framework for moving forward with other park renovations as you're setting up contracts. So Hunting Park United is the community group, you may remember, and Foundmont Park Conservancy is the group who sort of stands as an intermediary between the city park system and the community. And so what was able to occur is that the concession contracting could go through Fairmount Park Conservancy, and then they would have more autonomy over the funds that were generated in order to give the money back to Hunting Park United. So we were able to establish that with the city as a framework. Implementation and marketing was another piece that we spent a lot of attention to, and really this is where the conversation switched over to some of our experiences in other places. So you may be familiar with this idea of slow, go, and woe. It's the idea that everything is not bad, that you know, some things are better than others, and so that was the approach we took with the concession stand. Basically, you kind of did it in three steps. First, we planned, we talked to vendors to understand what were the biggest drivers of their sales, what were the biggest challenges to change. Some of the things that we heard, you know, sodas, the profitability on soda, especially fountain soda, is huge. It costs them about 3 to 5 cents to you know, pour a fountain drink, and if you're charging $2, that's a pretty good profit margin. The other issues, though, when we talk about steaming or providing some healthier options, is how long it takes to cook. So if you're baking something instead of frying, it takes longer. If you're steaming, you might need professional steamers in the facility. And then taking some time to look at menus, see if you can cut out, like make the default whole grain bread, make the default low-fat mayo. And then we establish a new menu. This is an example from the New Jersey project now. So reordering things so that the salads come first or eye level, and then defaulting to some of these options that are healthier, vegetarian, whole grain bread, smaller portion sizes. Still have fries on the menu, but instead of getting a 10-ounce fry, you get an 8-ounce fry. When we talk about pricing, we talked about changing the cost, making sure you weren't charging more for fruit than chips, for example, so that it's easier for people to make a healthier decision around pricing. And promotion, we did a lot of taste tests and price reductions, adding some signage. Then simple examples of hiding the soda. So in some cases, the water cooler will be right there, or the refrigerated cooler with you can see through the glass that you might have the soda cans there instead of that, you know, putting the water bottles right there and putting the soda cans below so people would have to ask for them. At the end of the day, when we talk about evaluating them, it's really, I'm just going to speed through this because I know my time is out, looking at three different categories: documenting the process, measuring the sales, and then trying to connect the sales to the calories. And some more itemized things that you can look at. Obviously, you want to consider the profit margin, because you're not going to have a project for very long with a for-profit entity if they're losing profit, or they perceive that they're losing profit as a result of your project. And we were lucky enough in the case of Princeton to have a pretty sophisticated point-of-sale system, which was another investment that seemed to be worthwhile. So in conclusion, it's definitely becoming more of a national trend, the healthy concession effort. And healthful vending was listed as one of the top 7 new food trends in an industry report. So it's not unique just to public health practice. It also seems to be catching on in industry as well. And I have these Creating Healthy Concessions brochures if anybody wants one. Thank you.